The Hurling Show. From Off the Ball.
Hello and welcome to The Hurling Show here on Off the Ball, which is today. I'm Shane Stapleton, and beside me in the studio is Michael Verney of the Irish Independent. We will have Will O'Callaghan in here as well. He's just off doing the sports bulletins at the moment. Michael, how are you getting on?
Good, Shane, yourself?
Not too bad. The All-Ireland semi-finals last weekend. Kilkenny 227, Cork 318, Tip 225, Laois 118. Now, if anyone wants to get any questions in to hashtag the Hurling Show at Off the Ball, please send them in. Any thoughts you have as well, send them in to us too. But there's no better place to start than the Goat of the Week. Now, he'll come up on the screen in a second.
There's only one, I presume.
Yeah. Oh, it had to be.
310.
3-10 for Patrick Horgan. It really is one of the great virtuoso displays. And that goal where he's down on his knees.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah,
in fairness,
yeah.
There's not too many players could have done that. And it's the same end that Brian Corcoran did it off his knees against Noel Hickey as well in the All-Ireland final.
Many moons ago. Is there a better player out there in the Championship at the moment that doesn't have an All-Ireland?
Oh, jeez, and it doesn't have an All-Ireland? No, I wouldn't. Yeah. I wouldn't think so. And it's off. The other day, I actually only looked back on it before I came in here. It was off limited ball as well. Like, they did not get enough ball into him. But nearly anything that he had a hope of winning, he won. And the goal where he plucked the ball, I don't know how he could even see the ball with Hugh Lawler's head in the way.
It made no sense, did it?
Yeah.
The way it came in, his hand seemed to be like that, and the ball came in like that. I just couldn't understand how it
was. Brilliant, yeah. He took a fair whack of steps in it to get into the position to strike for the goal. But
there he is. Yeah. So he's the goat of the week, but he actually looks like a sad goat there as well. So, yeah, one of the all-time great performances at Croke Park as well. And
I don't think, like, I marked him once, actually. He came on, I was after marking Fraggy Murphy in a qualifier in Tullamore, and he came in about 20 minutes to go, and I remember, do you know when you do everything you possibly can to stop a lad scoring, and you kind of think you can do no more. He scored a point. I don't even know. His hands didn't seem to move. His legs didn't seem to move. I was literally in his face, but his wrists are. I've never seen anything like it. The score he got underneath the canal, or underneath the Cusack end, where he kind of came out and came back onto his left. There's very few players can do that off their, in inverted commas, weaker side as well, to be able to do that. He's just phenomenal, and it's such a bad state of affairs for Cork that, like, he's literally carrying them. Between him and Cadogan, they're carrying Cork. Like,
are they? Do you think that in some ways, and I'd equate this to, do you remember in 2015, if I have the year right, when Callanan scored, was it 3-8 against Galway in the All-Ireland semi-final, and Tip lost by a point, that I thought one of the, obviously Callanan was unbelievable in that game, but one of the main reasons that Tipperary lost that game is because your focus is so much on getting the ball into that player's hand only that the rest of the team doesn't become involved. So Alan Cadogan and Patrick Horgan seemed to be the sole focus of that Cork attack. Half forward line didn't score. A huge amount of other players weren't involved. Is that a little bit of the issue too?
I don't know, like, because say, look at Conor Lahan, he definitely had 2 to 3 shots anyway that just went wide, like, but it just seems like everyone else is kind of bereft of confidence almost, you know? Like say, like Conor Lahan, like 3 or 4 years ago, you would have been looking at him as probably not consistently, he probably wasn't delivering, but on his day he could do absolutely anything. Like in club games in Cork, he puts up like phenomenal tallies in Cork, but he just hasn't been at it this year. I know he's been carrying a couple of knocks and different bits and pieces, but like he was just anonymous the other day. Shane Kingston came in, probably touched the ball maybe once or twice as well. A player a couple of years ago that we would have said this lad is going to explode in the scene and he's going to stay there, and he's been kind of on and off. Like, so I don't know if it's an over-reliance on one player. It just, you give it to the player, give it to the two boys that are playing with confidence, really. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, we have to talk about Kilkenny. Like, Brian Cody continues to get these teams really deep in the Championship. And it's not a star-laden team. How does he continue to get them this far?
It's unreal. Like, I would say, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that over the last 2 years, I think this has nearly been his, in inverted commas, most successful period with Kilkenny. Yeah. Like, how they won a league last year is, like, at one stage they were looking like relegation candidates, then they're going to win the league pretty comprehensively. They're a team that everybody keeps saying that they're over-reliant on TJ Reid, yet they managed to score 217 from play without him scoring from play the other day. Like, how he does that is just unbelievable. Like, as I said it before on the show, Brendan Cummins always says you have to be 5 or 6 points better than Kilkenny to beat them by a point. And they just seem to eke out, just when it matters most, they seem to be able to eke out that little bit more. And even they, it was like the old times the other day. Billy Ryan came on and got two. Bill Sheehan came on and was really dangerous and got one. They had the bench kind of back. I know it's not the same
Wally
start
Walsh
to the
came
bench.
On and got three. Well,
yeah, exactly. Like, you know, and they were the kind of things that tipped them over the bench. And anyone that says like they don't do tactics or anything like that, they were in serious trouble after what, 4 or 5 minutes?
Yeah.
And then even Joey Holden just went back around the D, just around this area here. Just meant that the two boys inside, that when Cork looked up, the avenues were kind of been shut down by someone. So they actually didn't really hit the ball in at all until, I think, kind of when they kind of solidified there, Holland kind of moved back out and they got some joy back inside again. But anyone that says they don't do tactics are...
Oh, well, they're off the rocker.
Yeah. Now,
and this is set up to look at Cork and Kilkenny's tactics. We'll do that in a second. Will O'Callaghan's going to come in, but while he does, the Face app has been everywhere this week. And just based on how Eddie Brennan has been doing, there's Eddie Brennan with the Face app, and that's how Eddie's going to look when Brian Cody finally gives up to Kilkenny job. And isn't it strange, around the mouth, now I could be wrong here, does he look a bit like Brian Cody around the mouth there?
Yeah, a small bit, yeah. It's a bit of Gordon Ramsay about him or something as well, maybe too, yeah. This face, I'm not into any of that kind of stuff really, to be honest with you, but I've got several pictures of myself sent on to me, all right.
You look haggard enough as it is.
Yeah, cheers.
Will, how are you doing?
How are things, lads? You well?
Good. Not too bad. We were just saying how great Kilkenny were. Were you impressed by them against Cork?
I was. We wrote them off routinely here last week. Yeah. All three of us were going for Cork, but... yeah, look, it looked shaky enough in the first half for them at times, but you know, when it was needed, they were able to eke out a result. And you know, as we kind of maybe expected once or twice, Cork's defence can be leaky enough, and I think that was a big issue in that second half, particularly against Kilkenny. And you know, when you're relying on two players to account for 3 goals and 16 points, you needed more from some of other the big players on Cork's team, which didn't come on the day. And you know, it's a desperately disappointing day for them. Obviously, it's the first decade where they're not going to win an All Ireland title. That proud record going back to the 1890s, is now broken. But, you know, Kilkenny, obviously, you know, it's a remarkable resolve. And it's funny how much Kilkenny's season has changed, maybe even in a 10 or 11 day spell, because they lost those two Leinster finals. There was the disappointment of that. Cork were kind of expected to win the quarter final against them. And now we're talking about Kilkenny preparing for 3 different All-Ireland semi finals at minor, under 20, and senior level. So the wheel just keeps turning with the cats, doesn't it?
Let's talk about TJ Reid, though. He didn't score from play, we know that. But I was totting it up afterwards, because as I was doing the notes during the match, I kept them in like, TJ Reid assist, TJ Reid wins free. You know, he was involved in 15 of the scoring chances and they had 43 overall. Like, that's an incredible contribution. So whatever way you'd like to think, geez, and they stopped TJ scoring, they didn't stop him impacting the
game. And kind of every time he got the ball, I think he knew that he wasn't going to be able to manoeuvre scores himself. He just never really had space.
Stephen McDonald was on him.
He pushed up quite tight on him, and he kind of knew the second he got the ball, okay, I'm not going to be able to work a score here. There's probably more than one on me. So he was always looking up. He always looks up anyway. But he was playing the heads up everywhere. He won at least 3 or 4 frees as well that were scored. His free taken, I don't think he missed a free the other day from various different angles and things like that as well. So like, while it's one thing keeping him scoreless, it's another thing trying to kind of negate his influence in the game.
We're going to look at Colin Fennelly's role. We have an image coming up on screen here as well to see the way that Kilkenny set up an attack. So that's just an image I took during the middle of the first half. And you can see absolutely everyone clears out from beyond the D to leave him one-on-one against Owen Cadogan, who, to be fair, has been quite good in those situations. He's a very good athlete. But Colin Fennelly is just, he's a greyhound out there. And if he turns and goes at you, as he did for the goal, I'm not sure what else Owen Cadogan could have done there. I know for a second Fennelly kind of stopped and stuttered for a split second. But if he gets the ball and goes at you and goes at that shoulder that or that side that's holding the hurley, so Owen Cadogan is right-handed, if you go at that shoulder, you can't actually grab him to pull him to stop him. You have the hurley out and it's either a free slash close to a penalty or he goes through because that's considered the weak shoulder because you don't have the hand open. So what do you do?
It sounds simplistic, but you have to then try and deny him the ball and do anything you can in the very first instance, because if he gets the ball, you're in serious trouble. Just what you're saying there, that's very, very smart from him. He knows he's going to be pulled down if there's any chance, so go to the side where he can't be pulled down by. He might get a hurl around the neck and he might get a free or a yellow card, but that's very, very smart to say. It's like when you have the ball, you should never really go into contact with the ball, with the shoulder, the ball is in hand because you're giving them a chance to hold your hand. Whereas if you go into contact with the other hand, with the other shoulder, you still have the ball out here and can hand pass it.
And you can hold your arm out in the air and be like, look, he has me, what can I do?
Whereas there's a lot of people, a lot of young fellas would do that as well. They'd go into contact with the wrong hand, like, and then you're just giving them a chance to hold, and then you take a 3 or 4 steps and you're done for overcarrying.
Your natural instinct is probably to use your dominant hand anyway.
Yeah, that's true, yeah, very true.
I thought it was very interesting in the first 20, 25 minutes. Brian Cody rejigged his back line several times. So this is the way the Cork inside line set up. So in general, it was Patrick Horgan, Alan Cadigan, who loved collecting the ball out here, turning and scoring, as he always does, and Seamus Harnedy here. The rest of the Cork half-forward line came the whole way out here, and you saw the amount of times that Nash was able to drop puckouts directly on Seamus Harnedy all the way up here, and they got some joy out of it.
In the first half in particular.
Especially. And I'll come to why that changed. But Alan Cadigan in the first 25 minutes, he was marked by Joey Holland at the start, then Paul Murphy, then Pádraig Walsh. And that's all. And Joey Holland had 3 different markers inside that time. He was on Cadigan, he was on Harnedy, and he was on Conor Lehan as well. And they were all over the shop in those first 15 minutes or so. Like, they were scoring pretty freely. What happened in the second half then, and I think with the images coming up here, showing the likes of Conor Fogarty and Joey Holden sitting back, but you can see that there. That is in the second half, that they had been drawn out by the wing forwards, Daniel Kearney and Luke Mead. But in the second half, the whole Kilkenny team, they kind of more or less dropped into the middle area and forced Cork to... Well, Cork were dragged out to the middle, as you can see on the tactics board here. If we just come up to the tactics board, Cork were basically... It was a situation where Cork were all dragged into the middle, and they were then trying to hit over a Kilkenny half back line that was basically sitting there. You know, so how do you get the ball over that wall? If you have drawn everyone back and you're under pressure in here because Kilkenny have pulled players out, how are you going to work the ball out? And I think they got spooked because they got blocked down a number of times. They made bad decisions. Yeah. And when you're under pressure, the idea of arrowing a ball over that half back line that's sat back.
Especially when the pressure came on, Shane, they poked a lot of ball back into that Kilkenny half back line.
Yeah.
You know, at a time when Kilkenny seemed happy enough just to pick off a few scores and Cork started to drop the ball in. They started dropping in early enough, 9 or 10 minutes to go. Kilkenny were more than happy to just hold back. And it's kind of funny, it was almost like the reverse of what Kilkenny were trying to do against Wexford, where Wexford seemed to come out with the ball every single time in the Leinster final. Kilkenny defending Hill 16 did exactly the same for the last few minutes against Cork. They looked very short of ideas when Kilkenny did set up decently in the second half.
Just on that as well, like, Kilkenny traditionally would always, well, they do tend to follow a lot. So they probably would have been expecting Fogarty. He did come up there for a while, and they would have been expecting wing back here to come up here as well. So they would have been expecting to have this space when those two boys sat back. It kind of just clogged it all up. And you have to talk about Conor Fogarty again.
Like, he's
kind of the man for every season. Like, he just seems to... You know what you're going to get from him. You know you're going to get at least a 7 out of 10 every day. And you're going to get this, like, unbelievable, savage kind of work rate as well. He's been a phenomenal player for them for nearly the guts of a decade now at this stage.
Started off in Daniel Kearney, and he got 2 points from wing back as well. Conor Brown, I thought, did okay. Yeah, he was ultimately taken off. He's one of those players. He played in the league against Cork at Nolan Park at the start of the year. And he's saw a bit of bite about him, a bit of a powerful runner, and thought, yeah, why isn't this guy...
It was a coincidence that he came in against Cork. He obviously played midfield for UCC in the Fitzgibbon Cup as well, and would have been able to, I suppose, gauge his standard against a lot of those boys, and was one of their better players in the Fitzgibbon Cup final as well. Also, he's got serious bloodlines. He's Angela Downey's son, so the bloodlines there would be very tasty.
But it was the start of the second half where the game ended, because I counted it up. Of the 15 shots at the start of the second half, Kilkenny had 13 of them. So Cork just fell away. It must have been the worst half-time team talk of all time.
Yeah, we'll probably talk about team talks later on as well, and the effect that they can have.
Will we?
Yeah, I think we might, yeah.
Do you want to do it now? No,
yeah, possibly, if we can, yeah.
Go on.
No, we were talking about the famous team talk, the video that came up on social media.
The Kilmina video, where...
I think your man is getting a hard rap now, I have to say.
If anyone hasn't seen this on WhatsApp, it's basically a guy giving a G up to his team before... I must look up what the actual score was, but he's given...
13 to 5 points after 21 minutes.
He was giving the team a right G up before the game. Was it his grandfather's
cup? Yeah, and I think it sounded like the game was in their home patch as well. Yeah.
Oh, there it is. Look, there's the scoreline. Kilmina against Park. Getting on easy against Park.
I think it's unbelievably harsh on your man, though. Like, it was blood and thunder he was giving them. Maybe the boys just didn't deliver for him, or maybe there's a massive gap between the two teams.
Would you be a good man for a speech before a game?
I'd be okay, but at certain times I don't think you should be talking at all, like, to be honest with you. No. certain times you kind of, do you ever be in the dressing room and feel the need that there's something has to be said or a particular point has to be made? But I'd hate to be the person that everyone thinks, oh, this lad, there's this lad gone again.
Yeah, he loves the sound of his own voice.
I think in fairness, a leader knows when to talk, and they know days when they probably don't need to talk. There's nothing worse than, I'm sure we've all had a manager or a captain along the way who feels that they have to give some big long speech ahead of a first round group game.
Yeah, and they absolutely suck the life out of you. Yeah. And go, oh, geez, but this lad,
do you know what? There's nothing worse than when someone makes a really good speech and then the manager or selector or player who has to have his voice heard tries to make a similar point and just totally sucks the life out of the room. There is nothing worse. Everyone wants to leave after the previous speech, and then this lad totally deflates the thing.
What about the switch from Cody to bring in Wally Walsh at half time? But the interesting thing that I saw was he went in corner forward, and Mark Ellis, who according to my notes here, he had initially started off on Richie Lai, but Mark Ellis went in corner back. Was that the right move? Because Mark Ellis is 6'3", I suppose, at least. And he's part of your halfback platform, and then you throw him in corner back on Wally Walsh. I get the size matchup, but is that the right decision?
Yeah, it's a strange one, isn't it? Like, yeah, you do, like Mark Ellis is. We were talking about like the kind of speed, agility, and different things you need to play in the full back line. To me, he's a halfback, and always has been a halfback. Anytime we've ever seen him, so that kind of creates a bit of a mismatch there. They're happy enough. Then they've taken away one of their kind of launch pads from the halfback line. He's not going to do much damage from cornerback. If anything, he's just going to be stopping Walter Walsh, and there will still be chances created for other people if he's just trying to spoil.
And they had tried to work the ball out in the first half. The amount of times that Sean O'Donoghue got the ball cornerback, tried to work it out to whoever was on the wing. It broke down a couple of times. Richie Hogan got in a couple of blockdowns, and obviously we must talk about Richie Hogan. To go from not being used for a nice bit of the championship, came in during injury time against Wexford in the Leinster final, scores 1-2. And again, you have to credit Colin Fenley. That little flick down for the goal was brilliant. Very naive from Sean O'Donoghue to go up as well when there's already one of his own men going up. It meant that if he didn't get the ball, which he didn't, Hogan was in one-on-one as well. But, you know, I mean, that's your arch kind of guy who likes to go in and rifle a goal for you.
They're unreal, though. Even, like, the Greg and Kenny team back in the day, it's such a hard thing to do, but they're going up for a high ball and the hurl would just turn in the direction that they wanted the ball to go to. And it wasn't just tipping it down to someone, it was even angling it to someone to run into. Yeah. And it's so hard to defend against. And Fenley was falling back and he just had the hurl up and was able to angle it down for him. It was beautiful, yeah.
Yeah. Have to talk about TJ Reid once more. We know he leads the cats, but we've a video coming up showing that he likes to lead the dogs too. And if the producer has let me down on that beautiful little tee up, I'd go nuts. No, this is on TJ's his own Instagram. So he's doing a bit of dog walking. I think that's his girlfriend videoing it. This weekend, TJ Reid is going to be at Barkfest and he's going to be a judge at that dog show. So from leading the cats to leading the dogs. Glorious stuff. That's Casper Reid, the dog.
Where's Barkfest on?
I thought you were an ambassador.
I was all in. Hold on. I have it here somewhere.
Is that kind of like doggy dressage almost? Is it like where they're
it's
kind
on
of just
in Red Mills, Killin Hill? Anyone have?
Oh, that's where his. That's beside where his gym is. Clever man. He'll get a few people in to do a few sessions.
He's no fool. Yeah. Good stuff. So let's talk about Cork in a wider aspect. John Myler, second season. Last year they obviously won the Munster title, went really close in the All-Ireland semi-final against Limerick, late collapse. I thought a decision from the referee as well cost them a free, which allowed them to basically see the game out. Anyway, this year, haven't won the Munster Championship, lost two of their games there poorly enough against Tipp and Clare, and now lose to Kilkenny as well. Do you think the pressure is heavy on John Myler?
I think so. It's the manner of the defeats. You know, it's one thing getting bet by a point or two or whatever. They were beaten reasonably comprehensively last Sunday. They were beaten out the gate by Tipp, and they were beaten out the gate as well by Clare.
Yeah.
So that's three really disappointing championship performances. Yet again, they have failed to deliver in Croke Park. Yet again, there's an over-reliance on the star man. There's maybe the Kingstons and the other guys that we expected to come in and fill the breach. Haven't really. They're still relying on the same type of players. I know a lot of people have called for clear out with certain players and different things. Just we didn't talk about their puckouts in the third quarter. They were obliterated on their puckouts. Yeah. There was just, I'd say when Nash looked up, he just couldn't see any space, and Kilkenny absolutely mopped up absolutely mopped up.
It must
during
be
that
a
period.
Terrifying place being a goalkeeper, and three or four puckouts have gone wrong. You know, you even see it with Mayo at the weekend with David Clark as well. And it must be one of the most terrifying things, because everyone, you know, as a goalkeeper, people are going to be talking about these puckouts.
And you're kicking it or pucking it half-hearted. You know what's going to happen nearly before you do it. Like, so I don't know. Yeah, just fair old question marks hanging over John Myler too now at this stage.
Yeah. I was reading Christy O'Connor's piece in the Echo about it this morning. You made a very fair point. It was like everything was very forgivable after the semi-final last year, because you know, you lose a semi-final to the eventual champions in a game you probably should have won, and one or two more scores makes the difference. You're talking a grain of rice tipping the scales, and that could
Semi-final. Potty.
Exactly like potty. Well, this year, the inconsistency of performance is what would worry you about Cork. That there's been some really good days, there's also been some really poor performances mixed in there, and you just don't know what Cork you're going to get. And that's the problem with last weekend as well.
We got a couple of comments in. Monaco GEA are after writing on YouTube.
Oh. Monaco?
Monaco.
Would they like to bring us out?
We'd happily go out for a game.
Show Monaco, no bother. Yeah,
no problem. Will Myler stay on with Cork for another year, lads? And I think we're kind of half addressing that. Do we think... I think he'd want to, for sure. But, you know, there might be a bit of uproar with the team underperforming to that level. Yeah. Not coming up short, but underperforming like that.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was a new face there.
Yeah, Thomas Crofts also on YouTube said, can anyone beat Limerick though, lads? That's the question. Well, I mean, I thought, look, just to go Tipperary again, I thought Tip's best chance of winning the All-Ireland was Cork getting to the final, so that's all she wrote for Tip as far as I'm concerned. I know, I'm exaggerating a little bit. But if you look at Cork, I thought, first half, they threw it away in a sense that they converted 12 of 24 chances. Second half, it was just taken away from them as well. And did they kind of half, in the way that Tip did in the Munster final against Limerick, did they half give up as it went on? Or do you think the fact that they pulled it back a bit, that showed that there was a bit of heart?
No, it was one person really that pulled it back, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, you'd have to, they did kind of fade away. And had Horgan not stepped up and got that goal, they could have been beaten 10 or 11, could they?
They went about 20 minutes without scoring from play from just before half-time to the middle of the second half. Right, I've brought this up a few times over the course of the year. Bringing Dougie Howlett in, what was the point of it? Because, you know, if you look at the previous few years, we just talked about it, they'd won Munster titles, they'd gotten to All-Ireland semi-finals, and, you know, there was the red card to Cahillane in 2017 semi-final and they fell apart. Then last year, obviously, they collapsed late at the end, but I think they were mitigating circumstances. They bring in Dougie Howlett, and I said it at the time, what does a guy who's played rugby all his life, what is he going to tell these lads about hurling? And all this vague talk of, like, he'll set standards, professional environment. They were professional enough to win two Munster titles. Do you know, they were professional enough to perform to a level where it was exceptional hurling. And, you know, he's going back to New Zealand now or whatever, so he won't
That's
be involved from here.
That's what's particularly strange for me as well, Shane, is the fact that when Cork appointed him, they knew that he was leaving for New Zealand in August anyway.
But does this point to an inferiority complex within the setup that you feel we need to get a rugby guy in because somehow he'll add to our professional standards?
It's a strange one. I think it's very easy to come down.
But I've been saying it since he was appointed.
Yeah, I know. But if would you be saying if Cork won the All Ireland, some masterstroke bringing in Dougie Howlett?
But it wasn't the other thing that I said, that you can't ever quantify the effect of this person. So why, like, it's all about marginal gains, and we'll target this area and improving that part of your body because it'll make you go that much faster. And you know, whatever, there are marginal gains all over the place in all sports. With this, you can never quite quantify what is the effect one way or the other. They might have won the All-Ireland with or without him. They've obviously come up short, but they've actually gone backwards this year compared with last. We can't say if Howlett's effect was good, bad or indifferent.
Interesting you say that,
Jeff. You can't measure it, what's the point?
Interesting you say that. That is a very vague area, isn't it? Like, it's if you win, it's like Brezzy being involved with Tipperary last year. If Tipperary had won, everyone would be saying it was great, but because they didn't and they underperformed, it was a mad kind of thing maybe to have Minder. So that kind of area and some of those areas in the back room are very hard to quantify, and they're very vague. So, like, it is kind of based on win or lose a lot of the time.
Yeah, but you're still not answering the question. Is it not a little bit incongruous to have this? You know, just based on the idea of this will help set standards. They're already a really good team.
No, they were already a really good team, yeah. Like, yeah. Was it mad Micheál Donoghue bringing in Kieran Donaghy?
Well, I mean, it's on the same lines. I mean, there is more of a GEA sort of a link-up to it, so maybe it's not quite the same thing. I don't know if it is or isn't. But again, bringing someone in from another sport, I just do wonder about it because you can't measure the impact of it. We've got a video here. Dennis Walsh of the Sunday Times, he joined Joe on Off the Ball on Monday to reflect on Cork's loss.
And what's the feeling on John Myler's future, Dennis?
That's going to come under serious pressure, Joe. There's no two ways about that. I mean, he's been in the job now 2 years. It's no secret that he wasn't the first choice. It's no secret that the players would have preferred somebody else 2 years ago. Depending on which source you believe, he was the third, fourth or fifth choice. No, he got the job. He would have been seen as somebody that Frank Murphy had a lot of time for over the years. Frank Murphy would have been a big influence on him getting the Corcoran 21 job a couple of years ago. Like he was a selector with the seniors before he got the job, because they had this overlap. He was the under 21 manager, so he was a senior selector as well, and he did well with the under 21s. He was always going to get it when their first two or three targets didn't want it. He's been around the scene an awful long time. He was involved with a Cop minor team 20 years ago that won in All-Ireland. I think there'd be a real push for change. I heard Tracy Kennedy, the Cork County Board chairperson, interviewed on local radio after the match yesterday, and she was saying, look, it's obviously the end of a two-year term. There'll be a review, as normal, and they'll go through the process. I expect that there'll be a real clamour for change, which might necessarily happen. And not, Cork are not falling down with options in terms of alternatives. You know, has the Cork County Board and the Cork establishment reached a point where they can say, lads, park the strikes and give the job to Donal O'Cusick? I'm not sure they've reached that point. I mean, it's absolutely crazy that, if it's the case that they haven't in their own minds crossed that threshold, it's absolutely, it's really damaging for Cork. But he's the obvious candidate, and I think he would bring in good guys around him. And I really think it is now, with so many of the old guard on the county board moving on, that it really is time to move on from the Cork strikes and give the job to a modern, progressive coach, someone like Donal O'Cusick, who can bring real energy to the whole thing.
Is that a fair comment? Someone like Donal O'Cusick?
Someone modern, I'd say, is fair. Whether he's been a coach at intercounty level, obviously, I don't know whether he'd want the manager's job or whether he'd want to be coach.
He was involved with Clare under Davy Fitz for a year.
But Cork have a serious conveyor belt coming. They're in the under 20 Munster final. I think they won the Forrester last year, A and B. They've had a lot, compared to 3 or 4 years ago, they've had a lot of success at underage. Mm. So they're going to have an awful lot of players coming through. So, yeah, going with someone modern, I'd say, wouldn't be a bad course of action now.
But they've had a glut of great players coming through in the last few years that aren't necessarily kind of reaching their peak levels at this stage. So
yeah, and it's certain players that they need as well. It's probably, looking smart, it's probably take duff defenders that
Well, Colm Spillane was a big loss
for
that
reason. Massive loss. Yeah.
So what do you think this idea of Don Logue, for example, because he was name-checked a couple of times there?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one. Don Logue is clever enough probably to line up the job and to see if now is the right time for him to come in. It's like Mick said, I'd imagine, and like Dennis was saying as well, I've got a feeling there'll be a big push for Myler to be replaced. So I'd imagine you are already, if you're Cork County Board, probably thinking about potential replacements even before those discussions take place. I mean, Don Logue obviously as a name jumps out, but if you're going to put someone in charge, especially to look after those generation of players coming through, does Don Logue have enough experience to take over?
Well, this is the question. I mean, he's got a big name, I mean, over the years, obviously, like, very high profile, but if you're just appointing someone on the basis of name and name alone, surely you're making the same mistake that umpteen professional, Premier League soccer teams have made over the years. Let's just get him in because his name. Let's get Roy Keane in just because.
And particularly a former star from that county as well. There's even more of a clamour than that.
And also the vague notion that, the players will row in behind him, whatever that means.
Yeah.
And Don Logue could end up being the perfect choice. I honestly don't know. He could be the perfect choice. But if it's just the idea of getting a name and a name alone, I think that's where there isn't enough forethought going.
I think if you're getting a name, you get a name that has 4 or 5 years intercounty. Just say, for example, Derek McGrath, should we say.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's a name who has serious intercounty experience and a proven kind of track record.
We've got Ross King of Laois on the line. Obviously, Laois came up short against Tipperary at the weekend by 10 points, but it's been a great journey this year, Ross.
It has indeed. Well, boys, I spent the whole morning getting my hair ready. I thought it was a Skype interview. Down there. And now I'm driving back to work. I said, well, it's faking anyway. But, suppose all in all, it was a great year, I suppose. We're small, a bit maybe disappointing with the finish in the Tip match, all right, and there's probably a bit of a gap in the end, but look, in all in all, we set out what we wanted to do. The boys, especially at the start of the year, they wanted to get to the league quarter final. They achieved it. Went on, we won to John McDonough, and then we got to an All-Ireland quarter final. So, I suppose if you ask any Laois hurler to start this year after last year, what would they like to achieve? They were three big goals, and we actually achieved all three. So, we're probably fairly happy where we're at.
Roddy, it's Will here. Just kind of wondering, you know, compared to last year when you played Kerry and when kind of relegation to the Christie Ring was a possibility, compared to where you're at now, playing an All-Ireland quarter-final in Croke Park, you know, playing and competing very well against Tipperary for the vast majority of that game as well. What's changed in the last 13 months?
Yeah, it's a tricky question. Like, I was only there for probably 3 months, so I probably can't answer as much. I think the overall attitude when I arrived back in the panel this year, as opposed to the whole maybe last 12 months, previous 12 months, was like chalk and cheese. You know, you had guys in an hour before training session doing their rehab rollouts and out the pitch early. There's a bit of a buzz about the place. They're after getting to the league quarter final and there's a bit of a buzz, and I suppose when Eddie Brennan came in first place, a little bit of a buzz came. Like, as you were just talking about previous to me coming on, you know, if you have a big name in charge that can actually back up his work, it seems to get people talking. And I'm a sales rep with Glenn B, and sure, every day of the first start of the year, all I was hearing, "It's great to have Eddie Brennan," or "I wonder what he's like." Or, and when I joined it, every question was, "What's he like? What's Eddie Brennan like?" So it got people talking and interested in Leash hurling and the results. And I say it kind of translated onto the pitch. Lads kind of wanted to impress Eddie a little bit too. It's nearly like when Mick O'Dwyer came to Leash when we were in 2002, I think it was, and the whole of the Leash just kicked on. They won an Leinster final and lost the one in 2014 or 2004. Seemed to get the whole county interested in the sport again, and people are nearly trying to impress Eddie or trying to impress Mikko as much as anything, and that's where you standards, and people are, when you're driving standards, I suppose results and performance have come as well.
Ross, I'll come back to you in 1 second, but just lads, you two are from the county just over the road from it. You're both from Offaly. What has been the perception of Eddie Brennan from across the road from you and the impact he's had?
I've been talking to some of the Leash camp during the year, and excellent is kind of everything that gets referred back, that it's been a complete change from what was happening with the camp last year, and that the amount of work that they've done and the standards. I know we're talking about, like, you know, the idea that Donal Logue will come in and drive standards and so on, but apparently that's exactly what Eddie Brennan did from the very start, that there was almost kind of an acceptance that if you didn't reach a certain work rate, you weren't going to be on that team, and everyone had to buy into that. And like, Leash had talented hurlers that have come through in various different groups along the way, and they're now being pushed by Eddie Brennan, and he seems to be the guy who's really driven the standards. Like, all reports from Leash are that he's been absolutely excellent. I was just looking at some of the stats from last weekend. Like, you know, they got the same amount of blocks and hooks in the game as Tipperary did. As many aerial balls were contested by Leash as were by Tipperary, and they made more tackles in the game than Tipperary as well. So that means, like, there's savage work rate from Leash as much as the skill level as well.
Just as much as anything else, like, when you're trying to get a buy-in from, particularly, it's a fairly young squad, the majority are under 25. You've got Niall Corcoran, who's only finished recently. You've got Eddie, who's only finished recently.
Obviously, and both still playing again, club
both
as
still
well.
Playing. Tommy Fitz is still playing with Port Leash, and you have Fran Dowlin as well. Like, that, I just think that's kind of, when you have guys that are really in tune with how hurling has changed in the last 10 or 15 years, it's easier to get the buy-in. And obviously, like, and Ross has said it himself, like, they've been absolutely meticulous, you know?
Ross, if you could sum up one difference between the last number of years when you're playing with Leash and this year, Eddie Brennan, in terms of off the field or how you are on the field, in terms of how you are in the gym, is there anything that would sum up the difference?
I don't know. It's very hard for me to comment, I suppose, in overall year, because it probably makes the first 6 months nearly, from October to April, the bulk of the, I suppose, the gym work and all that kind of crack went on. So it's not fair for me to comment on it. But the words, as you said, meticulous is probably on the ball. I'd say every day there's a different kind of WhatsApp message, or there's this thing called Slack, so it's basically just a group, kind of a team app that you can track everyone's performance and stats, and a lot of video analysis goes up there. So it's extremely meticulous. After every match we played this year, between practice or league or championship or whatever, there was not only like a team video analysis done, but individually we'd all get an email sent for every single play that you were on in the game. So whether it was good or bad, you could be on the ball for maybe 2 minutes or close to the ball, or different runs you made, everything was pulled out, sent to you individually, and you might get a call on that week, or you might be just talked about within training, or there was a couple of sessions I had where individual players, maybe two or three players, were
after doing a bit of a presentation on where things went well for us from a football point of view, or same way when it went poor for us. They were kind of new aspects of, I suppose, their modern thinking. So where Niall Carter, he'd be seriously ridiculous in his preparation. He would have lads kind of leading, he'd have the players leading as opposed to like a lecturer or a teacher student kind of environment. It was the players, they wanted to take responsibility, leading the team, looking into where we went right and wrong. So they understand it, so they really buy into it more so than just being sitting down, listening, and lads tuning out. So there are probably a few little things that I wouldn't have experienced before, and it's just things that, I remember my first training back, we actually went up and getting the rolling, and then I think Sarah had to do a presentation on a match they played against, I think they played Meath or Derry or something in Dublin the previous week, and it was a presentation, and they had all the points picked out, and they had little individual clips picked out, and they were asking our video guy to go to like minute number 19, 42 seconds in, and they can see a run made by a fella just to open up space for another lad. So it wasn't just, oh, this lad scored 6 points. It was all small, outside the box thinking. And a combination of this for the last few months has probably brought us on to a new level internally as much as anything. And it's just interesting. The lads are so modern thinking that, you know, they have us thinking in different ways as well.
Yeah, and just then the three big weeks you had in a row, winning the Joe McDonagh final and winning it in fairly comprehensive circumstances, then beating Dublin when no one really gave you a chance, and I think you were saying to Vernie there that you were listening to the show on the way down to the match, and then of course the Tipperary performance as well, which I think from the outside looking in, everyone was very impressed with how you performed that day because nobody really gave you a massive chance. Can you explain, you know, what was the highlight of those 3 weeks, and which was the most satisfying for you?
The most satisfying was the Dublin match, to be honest. The Westmeath match was brilliant. It was our first run out in Crow Park in the 15 years. We won silverware. Super. Unbelievable. Lovely Leash was petted in Crow Park, and we were all on a high. But deep down, we probably half expected ourselves to be at that level and winning. Then we went on a week later, that's Dublin, a tier one team in our backyard. As long as I've been playing, at least 7 years, we haven't won one qualifier game. So 7 years in a row, I've been bet out. That's a common thing for years. So when we got Dublin in for at least, we kind of believed we were good enough to do it. And it was just kind of manifest itself onto the pitch. And thankfully it did. And then just the outpour in the last maybe 3-4 minutes of the game and the 10 minutes after the game were... Oh, you never felt in life, never mind checking hurling circumstances. It was amazing. I was saying to Michael, if you could bottle that feeling and sell it, I'd never sell a ton of dairy feed in my life again. I'd be selling that bottle forevermore. It was amazing, to be honest. There was guys coming up, shaking hands, hugging and looking for selfies, photos, autographs, lads asking for your jersey and whatnot. As I said to Michael, they asked for everything bar your underpants that day. And it was special to be involved in because we're always looking at the Cork and Tipperary doing this. Then when it was Leash Hurlers there, you know, it was like second 7 years worthwhile for me and 12 for Matthew Whelan and that Neil Fyle, I think, is 10 years done. And it's our first time ever getting there. And I hope everyone gets to feel that way at some part of their career because it was unbelievable. But that Dublin match was the highlight of my nearly my life now, to be honest. Maybe that's a reflection of what I've done so far in my life. I need to get out or something, but it was amazing. That's all I could say.
Just Ross, I kind of saw a video of you doing a lap of honour in Crow Park after the last day and just acknowledging the Leash fans. Like, how big of an effect do you think maybe the last 3 weeks could have on maybe the future of Leash hurling?
Yeah, all of the reveal, I suppose, in the long term. Like, I'm getting texts and phone calls from guys in Kenya and Carlow, lads through Glantia, farmers and stuff and whatnot, just ringing to talk about the match and saying fair play. And I'm getting texts and just lads I meet in the street around Leash and Port Leash or Doro or Aberdeen. And they all kind of know us now and they're asking for us or they're asking, would I mind taking a number or just giving a young lad a slitter or something. Them small things that can. Maybe there might be some result in it in the next 5 years, but there has to be something come from it because, you know, I remember going to matches 10, 15 years ago and I'd be in awe of some fellas. And that's what kind of draws me on. And I never saw him at Croke Park. I never saw him winning trophies or whatever. I just seen him in our local ball alleys. Like, Hayden and Joe Fee. If I saw their hair and see the ball alley in Rathbone, I used to run out of my house, run down to the ball alley, just to be in the same pace as them. But they're probably seen us in cool camps this week and last week. Seen us on telly last week. If that has to... It has to manifest itself forward. It has to bring interest towards young lads. I think cool camps are probably up in numbers this year. I think just lads, I'm playing last night at the club and there must have been 10 young lads out poking around just watching us. It's just small things. That's it's important this year, but we'll have to build on that next year as well as the senior hurling team at least. We'll have to keep interest going. And that will in turn the two young lads on the street, but weren't ever on the street hurling. And they'll talk out with their local club or they'll drag their mother and father to a match that they wouldn't have wanted to go to a match before, and we'll have the crowds. So it all kind of nearly, everything will nearly snowball, you'd hope, as a result. And I just hope Leash hurling is stronger as a result of it, because we're crying out for it, and I think Leash people are crying out for a team, hurling team, to support for a long time, and please God we can be the team that can give them a few more sunny days up in Dublin.
Roddy, Cheddar had kind of brought you back out into the midfield a few years ago and you kind of played maybe in a more withdrawn role, but Eddie's put you back into the forwards. You've scored 3 goals in the championship this year as well. Are you enjoying being kind of back up a bit closer to goal?
To be honest, not really, no. I'd rather be out the field. A corner forward can be a tricky position sometimes if the ball is not coming in. It can dry up and maybe you might get 5 balls put into a corner. You know, unless you're really confident and on form, then 5 balls could be, you know, 2 will go behind and the cornerback will flick one away from you and he could clear 1 or 2. So you might be working off scraps. Or I just feel if I'm working out the field a little bit, I'm consistently in the middle of the game. I can affect the game more. But when I came back in, it was a thing just... if I can get in the start 26 panel, happy out. If I get in the start of the team, you know, I'm the luckiest man in the world, and I was delighted. I didn't really care, to that, but I just think I can affect the game probably more personally out the field a little bit. But yeah, I am delighted. I got the few goals and a few scores in the games, and delighted to do it. And as long may it continue. You don't really mind as long as the team's successful.
Ross, just to talk about how, you know, you would prepare for the Tipperary game, because I think your tactics, you know, as I was watching the game, it seemed you drew an awful lot of men back into your own half of the field, maybe one guy up top a lot of times. You allowed a lot of the puck outs to go straight to James Barry. Can you talk to us about your preparation for that game and how, I suppose, you needed an awful lot of shots from distance to go over the bar to stay in the game?
Yeah, so it would have been John Lennon. Would be a designated sweeper, I suppose, but not so much a sweeper. We wanted him to start an attack rather than just bring up their attack. And he would have done that for a lot of our scores, probably would have started from John Lennon. We brought Cha back mainly as a third midfielder, along with Willie Dunphy. We kind of had a 4 in the wing forward line, slash another one nearly out midfield. So we started off with Aaron Dunphy up front in his own. It was tough. Initially, it was a 15-20 minute idea to get ourselves into the game, because it was the biggest game of our lives. We were fairly conscious that we needed to keep it tight for the first 15-20 minutes to keep, and all it might sound like, to keep ourselves in the game early so then we can grow into it. Because the occasion would have, like, I was nervous before the game, I wouldn't normally be. A lot of lads were. We needed probably to be within the game within 20 minutes, 25 minutes, and then we'd start growing. That was the whole plan. And it kind of started working. I think it was 1-9 to 2-10, I think, at half-time. Maybe it was 4 down. And the plan was to start shoving up maybe 45 and 50 minutes to really go for the game. And then, unfortunately, Aaron Dunphy got the red card. And it was such a nuisance of a time for us early in the second half, because if it happened before the second half, you know, we're sat down, we're able to kind of discuss what's best to happen. How are we going to best react to it? But it didn't. It happened in the cold face of play. We were out in the field, you know, we were kind of thinking, what are we going to do? I was up front of my own. A lot of the time, there's literally only 2 half forwards. So there's 3 forwards facing 4 and 5 tip backs. It was seriously tough. But that was the plan. It was kind of settle us into the game first 20 minutes, And it worked. It worked perfectly. And we said we'd stay going to half time. And we went in 4 points down, I think it was. And then, you know, I went kind of belly up. And poor Aaron got the red. And we probably, the whole plan kind of went out the window. Our plan was to push up numbers and drive at them, run at them, because we were causing problems with Paddy Purcell's runs. And Conor Feeling came on and won a couple of frees as well. We really needed the 15. We didn't have it. And look, it's a learning for us. Maybe we didn't have the plan B as such, but that was the initial plan. You know, plan A was working fine. If plan B was to push on in the second half, the sending off, obviously, it's impossible to connect for that.
It was harsh, wasn't it?
You're playing against class.
Aaron did connect with Paddy Maher, so I suppose technically speaking it was a red card, but it seemed really, really harsh, and Paddy probably went down a little bit handy.
Yeah, I'd probably given, and I probably got worse over the years. Nothing has happened. Look, it's probably cuteness on Paddy's behalf as well. Like he went down, he got the little bit of impact, and you know, he got a red card for his team. And I think as a result of that, and then he like a boxer hitting a lad in the stomach, knocking the wind out of him. That's kind of what happened with us. We've seen a player going off, red card. You know, we're down to 14 men. It was tough. You're in HSQ, we're getting 45,000 people against Tip, and it's just tough. It was tough to see. That's only for Aaron, and you know, we're a little bit disappointed over that decision as well. I didn't look. I actually had to back. I've been told 200 times this week about how harsh it was. But look, just I kind of have to swallow that pill, forget about it, and you know, just trying to bring it forward next year, and we'll use it as a learning tool.
Was it hard for you to come back onto the panel this year? Because obviously the incident happened in the county championship last year. You got a butt of hurley into the face, and you had to get some dental work done and all that. Was it very hard for you to get to the stage of coming back to hurl for Laois?
It wasn't hard. I wasn't pushing coming back at all. And to be fair to the lads and the management, you know, contrary to what people might think around Laois, maybe I wasn't hounded or I wasn't asked to come in at all until that time in April with Eddie. I just played a league match against Burs Ossory in Rathdowney, and it was about the only game I played well for my club in the league, and he so happened to be there, and he rang me. We met up in the Horse and Jockey Hotel probably that week, and you know, it's all I'm on record for saying, we sat down for probably 2 hours and he spoke for the majority of us, and it's just his enthusiasm was nearly infectious. And you know, he came across that he was genuinely really, really passionate for Laois and going forward. It wasn't a short-term thing, and he really seen us going forward. And he kind of made my decision easy there and then. And then I just wanted to make sure that I didn't think I was pricking around, for want of a better word. I didn't want anyone thinking that I was blighting them or skipping all the heavy going, because that wasn't what I was planning. I wouldn't be with Laois only Eddie made the call, and it's simply that. I'm just so lucky and gracious that he did, and I got the opportunity to go in. I didn't plan on it at all. You know, I was kicking soccer away in Kilkenny every weekend, and it was pure luck, and that's all it was. Maybe it was fate, but I'm delighted I went back in, and the luckiest man in the world. It's the best memories I'll ever have from the last 3 weeks, and I'm just thankful for all the lads and Eddie for accepting me back in.
Ross, remember you did the interview with Shane Keegan not too long after the county final, and you were saying that, you know, realistically, you might not play for Laois again. Was that realistic, that you might not have played inter-county ever again?
I don't know, to be honest. I think I'd done that interview maybe 2 weeks after, and I was probably in a low enough spot, I suppose. I just kind of got off. On the dentist chair, saying this, none of this is water. Like, why would you bother? Like, this is ridiculous. I was in bad form overall. It probably was at the time. I was thinking, like, what is the point? Like, I'm not going through all this again. And I said that was early days. There's probably a lot of emotion attached to it. And I kind of said to myself, second, I used to play a lot of soccer, and I kind of had it in my head then. Maybe it's just a little bit of faith, like, should I pursue soccer a little bit at 25? I was only gone 25 at the time, last October, kind of, when it happened. I said, there's maybe a given 6-7 years Laois, maybe it's just kind of a call and a social, maybe give the soccer a little rattle, because a lot of times my back of my mind really far back in my mind that, Jesus, I'd love to give it one rat as deep as I know, the League of Ireland or something. And I went back and played a bit with Evergreen and Kilkenny and my local club, Clover United and Rathdowney. And, you know, I quickly realised, you know, a couple of years out of the game, you know, you're shooting against the wind, really. And, you know, I was probably in limbo then. I was kind of saying, you know, I have a body now for the next 5 or 6 years that's in the prime of his life. And what do I want to spend it doing? Do I want to spend it doing, you know, kicking a bit of junior soccer local, not really getting the most out of myself physically or mentally even? I just wanted to max myself. And started coming to that stage around April that I was like, you know, I want to be able to look back at the end of the year and say, look, I've done this and that, and my goals were hit. With what I was doing at that stage, I wasn't satisfied in myself. Like, I'd go home from a soccer match thinking, you know, I might go to the gym now. Whereas I come home from a hurling match with Leash and, you know, I'm on a high for a week, or I could be on a low for a week, but the emotions I feel from hurling far outweigh any emotions I felt playing soccer. And, you know, I kind of realised that over the 6 months it took out. Obviously, when the lads were going away, I talked to Paddy Purcell and the local lads. You know, my enthusiasm started probably coming back a little bit, but, you know, it's a tricky thing. I don't know, was it realistic at the time? Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't, but I probably need the time away to realise, like, what I was missing out on.
Well, Ross, I think the hurling public are delighted you came back, and especially the Leash public. You've been very good with your time. Thanks very much for coming on.
No bother, lads. Thanks very much.
Cheers, Ross.
Cheers, Roddy.
Yeah, I know what he's talking about, trying to pick up a sport after not doing it for a long time. I played Gaelic football there on Tuesday night, and less said the better.
I think he's playing down in the soccer building, by the way.
Yeah.
Shane Keegan that weekend. And Shane Keegan was saying to me when he was at Evergreen, he thought that, you know, Ross wasn't too far below Seanie Maguire's kind of territory. So he reckoned he could have played League of Ireland if he applied himself to it.
Tag Eddie Brennan when he said he wanted to get out the pitches.
Will, you have to go and do some sports bulletins. So just while you're doing that, there's a video doing the rounds on the internet at the moment of some American guy talking about hurling. Have a look at this.
Because I feel like a person woke up and said, I want to play baseball. No. I want to play football. No. I want to play soccer. No. I want to play rugby. No. I want to play golf. You know what? Just put it in a pot and we're going to call it hurling. Do you understand how difficult it might be to play goalie? Hey, Josh, we want you to play goalie. I play goalie. I'm a dope goalie. We want you to play goalie in hockey. Bring it on. We want you to play goalie in soccer. Put me in the game, coach. We want you to play goalie in hurling. You want me to play goalie where? Nah, I'd rather go eat a bed of nails on the back of a shark in the middle of a swamp on planet nowhere, bruh. Hurling has to be the most. I can't play hurling. I feel like I can play rugby. I think I can play football. I think I can shoot the J. I can't play hurling. I don't got the stamina. I don't got the testicular fortitude to have somebody running at me full speed, shoulder me in my throat. Not elbow, not poke, not punch.
Yeah, he's windy. That's all I'm taking from that as well. And the testicular fortitude, wasn't that an old line of Mick Foley or Mankind from
That's right, yeah. He actually reminds me of, do you remember Teddy from Hangtime? That program that used to be on Nickelodeon or Trouble back in the day, yeah.
No.
Do you not actually?
I don't know who you're talking about.
No, he's a famous enough actor now, yeah. But that's quite. That just shows you what people outside of Ireland think of Ireland.
Right, so just a little read here. Over the next 6 weeks, the lads on OTB AM, they're going to be picking the All-Ireland Minor Jubilee team. As we find the greatest minor hurlers from the last 25 years, vote in the poll or tweet off the ball with any selections, and that'll be coming up on the screen there, I think. Now, one final thing, Tipperary. There it is up on the screen as well. So who was the best minor hurling goalkeeper the last 25 years? So retweet and vote for one of the four contenders below in our poll, the Electric Ireland poll. So you've James Skettle, Donal Logue is currently leading it, Owen Murphy, and I'm after missing who
last Martin Coleman.
Martin Coleman as well. Quick word about Tipperary. We've only a couple of minutes left, and we might get an image up on the screen of how Leash dragged Tipperary up the field.
You a bit worried?
Oh, of course. Look at that there. Leash dragged their players all up the field. There's six players from Tipperary inside their own 65. But
there's really only one inside the 45, in a sense, like.
Of Leash players, yeah. So Tip are getting dragged way up the field. Now, Leash aren't going to score, and they're going to have to score from distance, really, to be a threat. but Tip got dragged all the way up the field. I don't think they worked the ball particularly well. I think Laois decided that every sharp puck out, they were going to mark up everyone and let James Barry, who's probably least comfortable with the ball, carry the ball. There were 8 or 9 times that probably wasn't the best use of the ball as well. So I was surprised that after 20 minutes, 15 minutes even, that Liam Sheedy didn't say, okay, this is an opportunity they're presenting with us. What we might do in this situation is bring someone else onto the field who actually would enjoy carrying that ball up the field and damage them. And I thought that was a bit of a missed opportunity as well from Tipperary's point of view. Surely you react to what's happening on the field in front of you.
Yeah, strange. And I know I didn't think there'd be radical surgery, but I still thought there'd be some new personnel. Like, is every team going to let James Barry have the ball now and try to make him feel uncomfortable? And if they think he's not going to deliver a good ball into the forward, is that what they're going to do? Like, So it was interesting in that respect. Plus, Tipperary are coming into an Ireland semi-final now on the back of one poor performance and one mediocre performance. So, like, I think Wexford are really fancy their chances.
I think Wexford have to be favourites.
Will you go in? No, stop now. Liam Sheedy said this, they were raging favourites. Stop now.
But you know that this isn't my style on it, that I'm actually genuinely worried about the Tipperary team at the moment. You know that that's not me just kind of trying to change the complexion of the situation. If you to go back 3 weeks ago, Tipperary playing against Wexford, yeah, Tip are going to win. But Tip have been rocked severely by this. And a couple of the issues that have been there for 3 years that I won't shut up about are still coming home to roost. 5 of the 6 forwards didn't score in the first half. A lot of good players off colour.
Against Laois as well. So, like, they would have been expected to. So, like, there's a lot of question marks for them.
Yeah, so we'll have to finish up there. We're after running out of time. And strangely, I haven't spent half the show talking about Tipperary. But coming up at 1 p.m. on OTB Sports Radio, there's OTB Gold with Padraig Harrington talking to Joe Malloy. Also, with GAA coverage all weekend. The Super 8s are on at Croke Park, so tune in to Off The Ball for that.
The Hurling Show. From Off The Ball.